I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Massive $27 billion surplus.
How about that? Fox News, they're reporting on that. The month of June, the Treasury took in a $27 billion surplus. Now, you got to play that off of these all these tariff talks and all of the predictions that tariffs were going to increase costs and cost the U.S. government money. And just like Donald Trump suspected and told many people, this is what's going to happen. We are going to bring money in like we've never brought money in before. And June was a great indicator of that. So welcome back to the show. The reason I bring all that up is that, of course, inflation numbers came out about a half hour ago and showed a slight tick up in inflation. And we want to talk a little bit about that this morning. We've got to Jerry Willits from us from the Fox Business Network. And Jerry, I know this isn't the story you're necessarily covering right now. I'll get to that in a minute. But can you comment for me on the inflation numbers we saw earlier?
It looks like we're coming in pretty much on target with expectations from Wall Street. Not a big move on inflation here. Consumer prices, month over month, up 0.3%. That's not a big number. It's a good number. And I know that Wall Street at some point going to start thinking about, okay, do we get a rate cut because of that? Now, you're seeing the NASDAQ take off. It's up 165 this morning. That's largely on news about NVIDIA, that Trump is going to allow the company to sell chips into China. That's the move there. Dow's off a little bit, not much. But I'm going to tell you, no news is good news when it comes to inflation. Markets like to see that.
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's all in how it's spun. Am I right about that? I Googled this, right? I Googled this. CNBC's headline, inflation picks up again in June. Axios, inflation heats up again in June. I mean, it depends on how it's played.
That's true. I think my analysis is probably the right one. This is not a report that's going to burn down the house.
Yes.
It's one that is sort of samey. You're going to have some level of inflation all the time, but we've really seen it moderate this year. And it's good news for consumers, obviously, because they pay less for what they buy at the grocery store. And it's something that's looked at by Wall Street because they're trying to figure out when the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates. So they want this inflation to moderate.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate your analysis on that. I was hoping you could help us out with that this morning. I know the story you're covering is part of the big, beautiful bill, and that would be this baby account, right, that everyone, co-host here, Kim, is due in about 6 weeks, she reminded me this morning. And she's looking forward to that $1,000.
Well, I wouldn't have had that with my first, right? So this is brand new because my son Easton was born like 2.5 years ago. So this baby will get what he did not get.
That's right. So the program's available to children born after December 31st, 2024 and before January 1st, 2029. So there's a window there of eligibility, obviously. This is an interesting program. They're formerly known as baby bonds. It's an idea that they've been kicking around on Capitol Hill for a long, long time, finally coming into law now. And from the point of view of someone who's interested in personal finance and the financial education of Americans, this is a great opportunity for people to like learn the magic of compounding, how that works over time.
Well, you know, they've been talking about population decline. I wonder if this is also in part to try to encourage people like, all right, let's get going here. You have till, well, I guess 2028 to make sure your baby's born by 2029.
You know, I saw that myself. I thought that myself. I was thinking, I think I see the hand of the vice president in this. Mm-hmm. Just a couple more details on these programs. As I said, the idea is that the money grows over time and can be used to pay for college, a down payment on a house, or even to start a business. Parents can contribute up to $5,000 a year until the child is 17. So this is the idea. It kind of reminds me of some of the savings vehicles that the government has set up for to fund people's retirement, the 401k, the IRA, sits there and grows over time. And the idea that you're starting this at birth, it's like magic, right?
It really is. And isn't there a can't businesses even contribute? Like, is that something you'd see where a business might promote itself to family-aged employees by saying, hey, if you come to work for us, we'll make a donation to your kid's account every year?
I think the limit on that is $2,500 a year, but you bet this would be one of those perks that they would put out there to attract people to come and work for them. And as you know, companies are having a hard time getting the people they want in the front door to work for them. So this is a little perk for them, too. There's a debate on the left about whether this was the right way to do it and whether financial institutions will really want to be involved because they're very small accounts, right? They're kind of hard to administer.
Yeah.
But my view on that is that banks and financial institutions have an opportunity to grab future company customers at birth.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to do that, right?
Yeah. Well, and too often people want a handout. So it's not the same as just giving someone $1,000 because let's be real.
They'd blow it.
And so this is something where they can't even tap into this, Jerry, right, until they're 18.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to let it sit and percolate.
Right.
Get bigger. And then you can hit it later down the road, which I think is terrific. No withdrawals before the age of 18. Look, I think a lot of people out there need to be educated about how markets work and the magic of investing. You guys probably know this pretty damn well. If you let your money sit and grow, the stock market is the best engine for wealth for regular Americans ever. And frankly, the costs of investing in stocks and bonds, for that matter, really de minimis. It's easy to get in. It's cheap to play. This isn't like an exclusive club for people who went to Harvard, you know,
right.
Far from it. You can start out with less than $100 for sure by calling a Fidelity or a Vanguard, plugging some money in an S&P 500 club or S&P 500 fund and getting started.
It's a great point. Jerry Willis with us from the Fox Business Network. Now, you've got a show coming up on the 16th and tomorrow, right, about this?
Yeah, well, this is exciting. So we're doing a stories on kind of financial education, right, and where people are nationally on how much they know about their own finances and what they're doing about it. And in the research, we found this really interesting thing about how though people know a little bit less about their money than they did a couple of years ago, they're eager for more information. They're starting new businesses at record rates. They're going out and finding financial education in ways they never have from people they've never talked to before because they're a little distrusting of those old-fashioned sources of financial information. So they're getting info on social media. They're looking to people they respect who have started businesses to find out how to do it. It's really fascinating what's going on with the American mindset when it comes to money because I think people are starting to get the message that it is possible for them to run their own money, for them to be the steward of their own finances and really be in charge of their own financial life. And when you are that person in charge of your own financial life, it's your world, right? Like you have a lot of freedom to do what you want to do. And I think that's where people are trying to get right now.
Well, 7 p.m. tomorrow, of course, on the Fox Business Network, Course Correction, Next Gen Financial Freedom, of course, hosted there by Jerry Willis. Jerry, we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye.
You bet. Yep. Take care. All right. She's great. Great. Getting, and that was timely to get her on here talking about interest rates. Did you hear how she played it versus how Axios was playing that? She's like, this is only a tick above what the experts expected. It's not a big deal. And Axios is acting like it's the end of the world, that inflation is up 0.02% or something like
that. It's all about perspective.
Very slight. It's all about perspective as usual. Speaking of which, if you watch Fox very much, you've heard of Joe Concha. He's great. He's a contributor on Fox. He's got a new book out called The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. We're going to get Joe on here and pick his brain in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Trump sucks. That's the underlying, you know, thought of everything the Democrats do. Trump sucks. Trump says, you know, the sky is blue. Trump sucks. You can't. That's not the way to win. It's just not, because it's not about Trump. It's about the people of the United States of America and what's good for them. And how do you get them to a place where they're in a better position and it's less stressful for them?
Yeah, Mark Cuban there. Of course, no fan of Donald Trump, but like Rahm Emanuel and a few of these others, he's starting to realize that the reason the Democratic Party is floundering right now is that every single thing they do is a reaction to Donald Trump. And it's a reaction because not so much that they hate the policy, which they probably do in a lot of cases, they hate the man. And they can't get past attacking Donald Trump instead of attacking the policies, I think is the point Mark Cuban is kind of making there. And he's spot on with his analysis on that. They cannot see past that. Here's the problem for the Democrats. There's a new poll out, and Trump is winning on all of this, including immigration. You know, for all of the, you know, crying at the alligator Alcatraz with the poor conditions of the people living there, having to brush their teeth in the same place they poop. Isn't that what Debbie Wasserman Schultz said yesterday, I think? If you look at the polls, these are 80-20 issues, and the Democrats are on the losing side of all of them. This was a Harvard Harris poll that came out yesterday, and the Democrats have been doing everything they can to attack Trump on the issue of immigration. I mean, putting ICE agents in dangerous situations, calling them out, and now here comes a Harris poll. A Harvard Harris poll that basically shows Donald Trump with a big win here. 75% of respondents support the administration's efforts to deport criminals who are in this country illegally, including 93% of Republicans, 70% of independents, and 59% of Democrats. 60% of voters surveyed said they support Trump's efforts to close the border, including 89% of Republicans, 55% of independents, and 34% of Democrats. I mean, listen to those numbers. Among people who either support the closed border or support getting rid of criminal aliens, even among Democrats, the numbers are 34% and 59% respectively. These are huge majorities of Americans crossing, well, it's not a majority on the part of the Democrats, but it's a huge number, supporting the removal of criminals and closing the border in this country. And here's the other bad news. The same poll found support for the Big Beautiful Bill. 17 out of 21 policy proposals in the Big Beautiful Bill have a majority support among the American people who've heard of the bill, according to a new Harvard Caps Harris poll that was out. That is horrific news for Democrats who are already scrambling to find something to latch onto. They hoped that their lies about Medicaid on the Big Beautiful Bill might be enough, but it's clearly not. Those messages are not resounding with the American people. They're just not. They're seeing what you and I are seeing. It's what Scott Jennings said yesterday. It's the greatest 6 months of any presidential term in my lifetime. It is what Donald Trump's accomplished. Even with the Epstein list, there's people still mad about the Epstein list. That's not an accomplishment. But everything else that he promised on the campaign trail, he's doing it. And now with this whole news about the Department of Education, the Supreme Court handing him a huge victory. What was it? A 63, I think, was the decision.
I can't remember what the
is what it came down to. But they're like, yeah, he's the executive. He has the authority to fire people. The unions aren't going to be able to step in and stop it in many cases as they failed and tried and failed. The NEA is not going to be able to step in and stop it. The Department of Education was a slush fund for the NEA and the progressive liberals in Washington, D.C.
Do you think that the states having more control over education will encourage some parents to move to a different state? Because some of these liberal states, like California, that are already crazy with their policies, might become that much crazier?
Well, I think the state of California loved what the Department of Education was doing. So they'll probably continue to do those sorts of things. But if you've got red states where they're suddenly not having their policy dictated to them, their curriculum, under threats of lawsuits and blackmail from Washington, D.C. Remember, that's what they were doing. The department, Department of Education had its own civil rights division, and it had a Title IX division, and it had all of these divisions that where they would come to states and say, if you don't teach what we want you to teach, we're restricting these funds, or we're restricting those funds. Same thing Trump's tried to do in some of these states where they won't help enforce immigration. Well, you know, we're just not going to give you such and such money. Both sides have done it. The point is, the Department of Education was using it in many ways to blackmail school districts at the risk of losing their federal funding if they didn't implement this woke ideology. And it was coming from the very top. And what this will guarantee is it's a states' rights issue. If you're wackadoodle crazy, move to California. Move to Illinois.
You'd be in good company.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you can go in and let your kid be brainwashed from day one because you probably believe in that anyway. But if you live in a red state, hopefully you don't have those same problems, and you can take that money and spend it on reading, writing, and arithmetic and school vouchers, where the poorest kids are going to benefit the most from that. But you know, here we go again. It took it all the way to the Supreme Court to get these liberal lower court judges overridden and just admit, yeah, the president's got the authority to go and do this. He's the executive. Congress passes the laws. The executive administers the laws. And just because you don't like the fact that he cut 1,500 people and he's trying to basically gut the Department of Education. Remember, this thing was born under James Earl Carter. Jimmy Carter created this to pay off the teachers unions, the big teachers unions, period. My formative education came during a time when there was no Department of Education. All these decisions were handled at the local level. And then test scores have done nothing but plummet since the Department of Education was created in 1980. They've plummeted. They've not done anything to improve the education of American students. And test scores today continue to suck. And what happened during COVID didn't help with that either. So we were hoping to get to Joe Concha there. I'm not quite sure what happened. But we will try to get that rescheduled and try to get Joe in here. I was hoping we could get him here to talk about a whole bunch of things, not the least of which is of course, the auto pen controversy, because I've heard him commenting on that on Fox. So we'll follow up and try to get Joe rescheduled for sure. We're going to be back here in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
The dots. Most people voted the wrong way because they were uneducated, and that's not to call them dumb, but literally life sometimes is life, and you're trying to keep a roof over your head. keep food on the table.
And you're just not paying attention. Now, that is Operation Let Them Speak, continuing in action right there. Jasmine Crockett say, you voted the wrong way. It's not because you're stupid. It's because you're too busy living.
Yeah, that's it.
Did I sum that up properly?
Well, it's funny, too, when she's like, it's not because you're stupid. It's because you're uneducated.
Yeah, yeah. You're not stupid. You're just uneducated.
You're just an idiot.
Oh, my goodness. Just so looking forward to this. I did see a flash poll, Kim. I think you mentioned this the other day, that in the latest poll for Democrat, potential Democrat presidential candidates in 28, Kamala Harris still came in with like 26% of the vote, mm-hmm. and was the leader in that poll.
I'm sorry, you're talking about for
president in 28 for Democrats.
So the latest poll I had seen was that she was for the longest time leading, and then Buttigieg, as of the last few weeks, just surpassed her. But she still, like you said, had, I don't know, 20 some odd percent, which is high.
And Newsom, of course, is right there in the pack as well. I mean, and it this guy is he's kind of frightening, right? He's good at spin. He's good at pivoting. He thinks on his feet. He's going to make a strong run. I would say I would put him as the number one contender for the Democrat presidential nomination in 28 right now, unless some bomb drops that I don't know about. He's a horrible governor. He's destroyed the state of California. For all the reasons that I hate the guy, I admire his political skills. He's got them. There's no doubt about that. Go to cut five. We had to bleep this from yesterday. I had to send Ethan a note saying, listen, not clean. You got to bleep this because this is from his podcast, and he drops the GD word quite often, I've determined. But go to cut to five, please.
We provided more to the federal government than we received the same year that Texas received $71.1 billion more than they provided to the federal government.
So you're a net positive.
Net positive. The 9 out of 10 of the donor states are Trump states, and I don't mean that pejoratively, Trump. 7 of the 10 are Republican states, but 9 out of the 10 dependent states, welfare states, are Trump states. The donor states disproportionately the blue states. 71% of the country's GDP comes from blue counties. Mm-hmm. These same crack-up counties with all these crazy liberals that can't get out of their own way, and the world's come to an end. It's 71% of the economy that country, man.
Remember when he debated Ron DeSantis and they would just put up the statistics and it was just talking about how bad the economy was and all these things under his leadership? That's really what you need, because the statistics speak for themselves. But here's a weird question for you. Obviously, we're dumbfounded that Zohran Mamdani very well could become the next mayor of New York City with his crazy socialist communist policies that he's proposing. I've heard people speculate that maybe there's something to the fact that he's a younger guy, but that he's, I don't want to say good looking, but he's a put together guy.
He's black, apparently, according to his college transcripts.
He just changes whatever he identifies however he wants. Do you think there's something to that with Gavin Newsom, that he looks the part? You know, they say that if you're good looking, people tend to trust you more.
He's out of central casting. I mean, there's no doubt about that. The successful ones, I think, generally are. But maybe that's got something to do with it. I saw where Andrew Cuomo is staying in that race.
As an independent, yeah.
Eric Adams is staying in that race. If they water down, like 400,000 people voted in their primary. That's how big New York City is. But it's probably a fifth of the number that will vote in the general election, and maybe less than that. And if they water down that vote, that's the best way to get that guy elected. If there are too many people in there, Curtis Sleeve was running, the other two, and then Mamdani. He could win the race just because it's a four-way race. He could. I mean, the possibility exists.
That came up when it was the Republican primary for governor, when they were talking about Ashcroft, Kehoe, and Bill Eigel.
Yes.
And had one of them not run, maybe it would have helped. It wouldn't have split the party so much.
Well, yeah, you're right.
You still have a Republican in the office, but...
If Ashcroft hadn't run, Bill Eigel would be your governor.
That's what I mean.
I believe.
So I think that people feel like, we're giving people options, and I understand that argument, but to a large degree, you're actually hurting the party by doing that.
Well, but that was in a primary.
But I get that, but that's what you see, is there's so many people who are eager to run, and I get it. I totally get it. But it ends up hurting the party as a whole.
Well, and at that point, you're also dealing with egos that are so big their heads won't fit through the door.
Bingo.
Andrew Cuomo thinks he's it because he used to be governor, and he feels like he was wrongfully forced out of the governorship, even though he killed lots of old people. And I think I've always thought he was incompetent. But his ego is so big that he's going to keep running for mayor of New York City. And he's probably going to get plenty of money to do so. Eric Adams is the current mayor, who thinks he should continue being mayor. So he's not going to drop out. And Curtis Sliwa is always a candidate. I mean, every election, his name's on the ballot. So none of those people will swallow their pride and drop out to keep a socialist from becoming the next mayor of New York. None of them.
Yeah.
None of them. And that's crazy. Listen why Mamdani thinks tourism is down in New York City. Go to cut 13, please.
As we, as Bob was saying, fight back against an authoritarian administration and Donald Trump's attempt at ripping up the very fabric of the city that we call home, of the country that we belong to and that we love, we know that his policies, they are not just disappearing our neighbors, detaining our friends. They are also turning the world away from our city. The rapid decline of tourists coming to this city is an issue not simply for us living up to our word as a city that welcomes the world, but it's one that has very real economic impacts.
What, anybody know what he's talking about? He's blaming Trump for the fact that people are not coming, not as likely to come to New York City.
People don't want to go to New York City because they don't want their tax dollars wasted on dumb things they don't support. They watch the videos of these illegals who are, you know, taking over the streets, and they're staying in these really lavish, what, 4-star hotel? Was it the Roosevelt or something like that?
Yeah, we could never afford to stay in if we went there. Right.
I'm just going to go across the border and run back over and say I'm illegal and be like, excuse me, where's my debit card? And I would also like to stay for a few nights in the Roosevelt Hotel and have my food paid for. Would that be all right? Times are tight, all right?
Good luck with that. Hey, remember that professor from California who got kidnapped? At least his supporters claimed he was kidnapped at the marijuana farm that ICE busted out there, where they arrested all those criminals and found a bunch of child workers. Well, we found him. And we're going to get to that story when we come back in just a minute.
I mean, you're talking about the Otto Penn. Look, the Otto Penn, I think, is maybe one of the biggest scandals that we've had in 50 to 100 years. This is a tremendous scandal. And I know the people on the other side of the, oh, see that desk, that Resolute desk? Unfortunately, he used it before me. But, you know, we have our choice of 7 desks. They're all beautiful. But I chose the Resolute, and so did he. Unfortunately, but the people on the other side of the Resolute desk, I know them, Lisa, the whole group, and they're no good. They're sick people. And I guarantee he knew nothing about what he was signing. I guarantee it.
All right. That's President Trump yesterday talking about this Otto Penn controversy. And we're lucky enough to have Joe Concha with us this morning. Of course, a Fox News contributor and author of a new book called The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big, Beautiful Campaign. Joe, how are you?
Outstanding. Happy Tuesday. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Great to get you on here. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes. What's your take on this Otto Penn thing? The mainstream media is acting like, oh, nothing to see here. Joe Biden says he personally approved everybody he pardoned. There were thousands of them.
Yeah, exactly. All 8,000. He was on top of it, no question about it. He's like Stephen Hawking meets Ricky Prohl, you know, if I'm going to use a Rams reference. The speed and the mind is incredible. Now, look, anybody logical looks at this and says, of course, we know that Joe Biden's brain turned to applesauce, not just during that debate about a year ago in Atlanta, Georgia, but well before that. Even during the 2020 campaign, he said some profoundly weird stuff, and obviously they kept him in the basement for a reason. So, yeah, the mainstream media is saying there's nothing to see here because they are culpable in all of this. right? They're the ones who told you about cheap fake videos last year as far as when Joe Biden's shaking hands with the air or forgetting the names of his cabinet members or having conversations like that kid from The Sixth Sense, like he could see dead people, literally having conversations with dead leaders. So, yeah, of course they're not going to pursue this. And if this were Trump, obviously it would be the biggest story 24/7. But, you know, it's a Democrat, so let's move on and talk about other stuff that the American people don't care about.
Well, I know something that people do care about is this Epstein client list. And I obviously people feel like we're beating a dead horse and you hear different things. Oh, there is no client list. There is. What's your take on all this?
I always go back to the same question, Kim. And that is, if there was a client list, right? And let's say Donald Trump is on that list, like Democrats are screaming about now, if they suddenly care about this list. Don't you think that Barack Obama and Joe Biden would have released that in 2016 when he was running for president just to make sure that he didn't win? Like, it would have been weaponized by now. And on the other side, if there's some major Democrats that are on this list, then it would have been released because that's how it works these days. And I just think Pam Bondi, she screwed up here. I'll be, you know, totally candid on that. Don't say that you have a list on your desk when she really meant to say that she says now that she has files on her desk. Because when you say list, that's a smoking gun. Her choice of words was poor, and that's why people are pissed off right now.
That's true. It's true. You know, Joe, I heard Scott Jennings say this the other day, and that guy's knocking it out of the park. He's the only thing worth listening to on CNN these days. But he said he's just watched the greatest 6 months of any presidency in his lifetime. And I couldn't agree with him more. And you've got a book out now about how that whole campaign got together. And it was a completely different campaign than the last Trump campaign.
Yeah. In other words, in 2020, COVID, you know, Trump was out of his element in terms of he couldn't do rallies. The country was angry about this virus. Obviously, businesses shut down. Any president running in those conditions with a hostile media against them would have struggled and not had a good time. He had such a good time during this last election. You could tell who was winning by who was the happy warrior. And to go to McDonald's or to rent that garbage truck or to go to the Al Smith dinner and just have jokes like, you know, Democrats keep telling me that there are only two genders, and no, there's more than two genders, and I didn't believe them until I met Tim Walz. I mean, that's funny stuff, right?
I forgot about that.
So overall, the McDonald's thing, I think, was a stroke of genius, and that's why I used that photo of Trump and McDonald's on the cover of my book instead of the assassination attempt in Butler, because I felt that that just captured everything. Like, this is the guy that they're accusing to be Hitler, and he's literally working the drive-through, which at last check, Adolf probably didn't work any drive-through. So killed that narrative, and that's why he won, because he was relatable, and Kamala Harris was the worst candidate of our lifetimes by far.
Yeah, well, I got about a minute left here, but the biggest difference to me seems like Susie Wiles, because even when we try to get guests from the White House these days, there's a different approach from this administration.
Yeah, having met Susie Wiles, I mean, she's as serious as a prison fight and tough as a $2 steak. In other words, she runs a tight ship over there, and that's why you don't see the leaks coming out like you did in 2017 during the first administration where no one basically could be trusted. So, yeah, Trump has a loyal team around him, and Susie Wiles is somebody he trusts. And it's hard for Trump to totally trust somebody in terms of running things besides himself, but that's what he has with Susie Wiles.
Yeah, very true. The book is called The Greatest Comeback Ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. Joe Concha, keep up the great work, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I'll do it again soon.
I hope so. Thank you very much. Glad to get better late than never. It was a little mix-up on their part with they thought we were calling him. He thought he was calling us, or vice versa, one of the two.
I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, no kidding. That's good that we got him on here. I'm glad to hear that. All right, so those inflation numbers are out. I'm sure Kilmeade's going to be covering that story as well. He's going to be coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Of course, Annie and Mark in to round out your day. Keep it tuned right here to 97.1 FM Talk. Kim and Ethan and Sue and I'll be back tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Hope you are too. We'll see you then.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.